Hi, this is Kalina.
And this is Gabe.
Welcome to
Bigger Than Love.
Hi, everybody. Kalina here. I'm really excited today because today's episode is all about Gabe. Talking about music, mind, and the messy magic that makes Gabe awesome.
Messy magic? Is that what you said?
Messy magic,
Messy magic. Okay, I'll take it.
The way I'm describing it right now, messy magic. And so we'll hop right in with the questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you scared?
No.
No? Not scared? No. Never? How did sound or music first become a part of your life?
So according to my mom, the story is she read an article somewhere that said kids that can't sit still might benefit from music lessons. Not far from where I grew up, the music school of the North Shore is located. And according to my mom, the story was like we went there and they gave you the option of violin, to which she said there's nothing worse than a bad violin. Piano, but I was kind of small for my age, so my feet didn't reach the pedals and my hands were small. Yeah. The flute.
And I don't see you as a flute.
Mimi's not a fluteman. And the last option was the cello. And that's kind of where it began. I actually have somewhere here in my little closet studio, I actually have the first notebooks because my mom would come to my lessons. I was 4 and I would have 15-minute lessons. I was a Suzuki kid, which is where you learn by ear before you read. So I started out playing the open strings and then eventually you learn Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and you do different bow variations. So Mississippi Hot Dog back and forth or Wish I Had a Motorcycle, Wish I Had a Motorcycle, Wish I Had a Motorcycle, Wish I Had a Motorcycle. Last one is a really good one that you practice the hook bowing. It goes, Dr. Suzuki says never be lazy, so practice and practice until you go crazy. And here I am, 40 years old, I'm
riveting.
still crazy.
Riveting. So your first introduction to music was your mom taking you to the school because you wouldn't sit still. What were you doing? Like, what were you into when you were 4? I mean, can you even remember?
I have no idea. I mean, they say in Yiddish, they call it spilkis, which is like, you can't sit in one place for very long. You know, all I was told is that I had the spilkis, you know? So cello was there to alleviate my spilkisness.
So did you like playing the cello?
As I come to learn in retrospect, the story is that I would gravitate towards the cello irrespective of how I was feeling. Like if I was feeling happy, I would go and sit down and play the cello for half an hour. If I was in a bad mood or I was sad or feeling some certain way, I would still gravitate towards sitting and playing the cello. One of my favorite music quotes is from the legendary violinist Yehudi Menuhin. Every time you open your case, you should be happy. And I always thought that was an interesting litmus test, if that's the right word, for how you're feeling about where you are in your journey. Maybe you could say that with yoga, too. When you roll out your mat, you should feel a certain way.
Along your journey in learning to play the cello, did you have any early musical influences or childhood obsessions?
So interestingly enough, the first thing that comes to mind, Phil Collins. In the Air Tonight, I always loved that song. It's a good jam. I love that song. When I was born, Sussudio was number 1 on the charts, so it stands to reason that Phil Collins was still in some like radio circulation. I just loved the intro to In the Air Tonight.
It's a good song.
I think I associate it to this day. I mean, we call it like frozen yogurt music. Music you might hear at the mall. Maybe not now, but definitely coming
up. The mall, CVS, you know, our favorite places.
Totally. For me, it was Love's Yogurt.
Our yogurt place was TCBY. So as you got older, did you continue to play the cello?
So when I was 12, the Music Center of the North Shore, they offered a class, upright bass for cellists. And it was taught by a bassist from the Lyric Opera. He was such a sweet man. His name escapes me. One thing I remember about him is he was allergic to coffee. And so he drank Mountain Dew.
Also a nice beverage.
Yeah, I always thought that was funny.
My grandmother's favorite beverage.
It was diet or regular?
Diet, but really, when you're in a pinch, should go for either.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Anyway, he was tasked with teaching upright bass to cellists. And I think it was, you know, to get the cellist to try the next instrument up. So I enrolled in it, and I was the only kid. So that's just eventually how I started to play the bass. It was probably around that time, too, that my dad decided to learn the alto saxophone at the neighborhood music shop. So I would wander in there with him. One thing led to another, and I saw the electric bass. 4 strings like a cello, but shaped like a guitar, which I figured maybe the girls like that more than the cello. just I gravitated towards playing that. And then interestingly enough, the bass teacher at the music store, his name is John Paul, and he was an angel. And he was a local jazz and funky bass player in Chicago. And just by chance, I started to take lessons with him. And he introduced me to a lot of funky music and also piqued my interest in jazz. And when I came back to my dad saying, hey, you know, I'm interested in some jazz, turns out that my dad is a huge jazz fan. Something that really resonated with me from a young age and continues to really be a foundational part of how I move through the world is hiding behind an instrument. And I use that word in part because I can't remember the name of the early childhood developmental specialist who said there's ecstasy in hiding and terror in never being found. And I've always enjoyed being behind an instrument, not having to use my voice. Not that I don't like the sound of my voice or something. It's more of like my preferred way of moving through the world is that way. And it's also why I personally never gravitated towards social media. Even the stuff that people see on social media currently, I know that you man that operation. Or what did Kevin Hart say? You know, that's just how my bank account's set up. It's just how my bank account is set up. I think that like when I started to play the bass is really when it started to coalesce for me in a professional context that I could do this for a living. Because to be honest, I never really excelled classically speaking at cello, even though it was always a part of my life. And still now I play it a lot.
So like kind of like using the instrument as a shield, as a way to protect yourself.
It's like a prism that shines both ways. A way to shield myself while also presenting myself. And I feel now, certainly like post-Pandeezy, I feel very much in my element, especially like working remotely. I really like it, yeah. But that's after years and years of interfacing with people.
I think a lot of people can identify with that, Gabe, though, because if you're behind an instrument or behind sound or creating sound, the audience's attention is going to what you're doing and not who you are. And so there's a bit of safety there, right? And the same as in yoga, like when you're a teacher, you're teaching yoga, and people forget that like you're a real person. It's like how we've joked when you're like a kid and you go to the grocery store and you see your teacher at the grocery store and you're like,
totally.
You eat, you know,
yeah,
you're just
totally.
Like, you buy groceries. It's like there's a safety in allowing attention to go to what you're doing, not always who you are, especially when you're young, right? And you don't really know who you are yet.
I mean, it is very much wrapped up in my identity. Even now in our conversation, I'm feeling the reverberations and sort of taking note of the reality that like as my brain was developing, it was very much like how a tree might grow through like fencing. And it's funny, of all the experiences I've had and learning, something that's like a really powerful force in my life musically and just sonically in general was like a lot of my dad's gibberish. A lot of like made up languages, a lot of funny words, purposeful spoonerisms and anagrams and all kinds of wordplay, as well as just like complete gibberish, is a foundational element of my music making in the sense that you can always make something more tame, but it's hard to make something more interesting or more adventurous. And certainly like as I grew up in Chicago playing a lot of jazz and really like living and dying by like some crazy jazz and going out all the time to see a lot of luminaries of Chicagoland jazz. There's such a freedom in that particular style of music that has this sort of like anything goes mentality. There's a great quote from Wayne Shorter where he said, to me, jazz means I dare you.
I like that.
You know, I thought that was cool. And like that really has become a bedrock of like who I am. I can always make something make more sense. I always make something like a little tamer, but definitely making the craziest sound possible always felt natural to me.
Yeah, you're so creative. I'm curious for myself and for our listeners, how do you relate to creativity? Are you someone who like chases it? Do you wait for it? Do you hunt it down? Do you just keep working? Because on this end, it just seems like you don't know how to not be creative. So I personally never see you struggling to find creativity, but perhaps that's just a perception.
I never run out of ideas. If somebody bursts in through the door with a sword, you know, like Kool-Aid man, like with a sword, burst through the wall and was like, oh yeah, with the sword. And then was like, you got to play straight for 4 hours starting now. I could totally do it. Really looking at like the inner machinations of why I'm able to do something like that is in part years and years of like intensive listening. And I still will now spend hours just listening to music. It's almost like every key, because, you know, there's 12 keys. Each key has like a different feeling musically, sonically, and then even in a tactile sense of like if I was playing the bass, like where B flat sits on the upright bass just feels a certain way. And I've been trained to make like 1,000 shapes just out of that B flat on the A string. But if I played the adjacent note, the exact same note, B flat on the E string, I would have another 1,000 shapes that would like flood to my mind. And certainly cello is another one. And then nowadays, like with all the Treish and monkeying around with different instruments, I don't think it would be possible for me to like run out of permutations of something to play or something to like,
yeah.
And I do think that in some ways, again, is tied to the gibberish.
Obviously, those of you who listened to episode one know that we met at yoga. But when I first met you, I already knew that you had different types of embodiment practices that you were playing around with. And I'm curious now that you definitely could add yoga to that and our practices that we share together, how that's influenced your creative process or how you make music or even how you hear sound.
I've just done so much yoga with you that it's so deeply ingrained in like my schedule. I don't even think like, oh, I got to go to class today. Time for yoga is just built in. And certainly what started out as cello yoga and now is music flow, it has completely shifted the entire way that I play music, in part because of playing the instruments that I created for class.
So those of you who are listening who are not currently a part of our community, Gabe and I have a few classes that we offer weekly in person at the studio where we collaborate. One of them is called Music Flow, where it's a regular flow class, but Gabe plays music and sometimes does covers and takes requests. It's really fun. And then a couple times a month, he also plays for our Yin class. It's called Yin and String Bath, where he plays string instruments, and that's a little bit more like ambient. So it's really awesome. And that's what he's referring to. It's been really cool as your partner in life, but also your partner in collaboration to hear how your sound changes from day to day. And I'm curious if you feel that. I can always tell when you're playing in class, like if you've had a sad day or if you're really in your head or if you're feeling really free and like funky. I can always tell by how you're playing, even if we haven't spoke about like what's going on. And I'm curious if you pick up on that yourself. Like if you feel that or if is that just me?
The place I come back to the most is the upright bass. Even though I play all kinds of different stuff now and all kinds of different sorts of music, the upright bass for so long was a primary means for like communicating musically. It's very tactile in the sense of like where I put my hands kind of like reminds me of 1,000 different things at once. It's just an instrument and a modality that's really baked into who I am.
I like that. I'm curious if you, just to be funny for a second, I've always wanted to ask you this question. I don't think I ever have, but if you were to create a soundtrack for your life, what would most definitely be on it?
I always loved Hosono. I think his American name is Harry Hosono. He was the bass player of Yellow Magic Orchestra and just a legendary Japanese musician and composer and producer. And he has an album called Watering a Flower that he made for the Muji store in Japan, which I think sells like socks and all kinds of stuff. And it's from 1989. And I know a lot of cool people have since like sampled it and done all kinds of fresh stuff, singing on top of it or interpolating in different ways. But it's a recording I will listen to from time to time on YouTube. And it's music that he made just to play in the store while you're shopping. That's not my favorite.
Like elevator music?
Yeah, but it sounds just like one person playing a little Casio keyboard.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like someone's playing with just one finger on each hand.
I'm curious what it feels like right now being behind the mic versus being behind the music.
It's terrifying. It just feels very foreign. I would say it's kind of like we watch a lot of like cooking TV, so this is like Restaurant Wars. Someone who's never been front of house.
Okay.
When I'm just really have just been like, you know, just
had your
like,
head down
just,
in the
just,
back.
Yeah, just being like chicken all day, you know?
Yeah, thank you, Chef.
And yeah, it feels very foreign. It feels like it's taking a Herculean amount of energy.
Well, we're really happy that you're here, or I'm happy you're here.
I'm happy to be here.
What are your hopes for the podcast?
I'm really open. My hope in this moment is that you and I continue to develop something together for so long, sort of turn my back upon any sort of digital offering that wasn't musical, just because I didn't feel like it was part of who I was. But I definitely feel like our relationship is part of who I am. You know, our creative partnership and our interpersonal relationship is just like a creative pursuit in and of itself. And so when you were like, you know, we should try a podcast, something we've talked a lot about is like, why not? What's the worst thing that could happen? I botch a take or I say something silly and I gotta say it again.
So final question is kind of a fun one, so you can relax. What do you think is cool right now? Are there any bands or musicians that you think are worth taking a listen to? You already mentioned one old school record, Watering the Flowers, so we already have one thing to go and check out on YouTube. But is there anything else that right now you're feeling really inspired by?
I don't know about all y'all out there, but I find myself listening to the same 10 records over and over, whether it's Low, I Could Live in Hope, Low, Curtain Hits the Cast, Townes Van Sant, Live at the Houston Quarter. But something that I have peeped a couple times, it is a bummer jam, but I am a fan of their music and I'm getting more and more into it, is Anoni, also known as Anoni and the Johnsons. This is from their solo record, and the song is called 4 Degrees. Mm. It's a song about climate change. A wild song, but I just think it's amazing.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing and for being bigger than love and being vulnerable. I appreciate it. I'm sure our listeners appreciate it. Those of you listening, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bigger Than Love. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments about the episode. Make sure to reach out. You can email us at contact@biggerthanlove.com. And yeah, we can't wait to hear your feedback. Until next time,
three peace. Thank you.